Hi there, you're listening to another episode of the Super Mercado Bros Video Game Music Podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is a podcast where we share and discuss the very best in video game music. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Today on the podcast, we're doing another composer spotlight on the incredibly prolific and esteemed video game composer, Hitoshi Sakamoto.
We are so excited. This is a very long overdue spotlight, and what a nice opposite polar episode from last week. One of the things that happened so much last week was a lack of taste, a lack of subtlety, and Sakamoto is just the epitome of taste and subtlety and beauty. He puts so much heart and effort into all of his music, even back from the Game Boy days all the way to his work nowadays. So what an incredibly talented composer.
Yeah, you could say we went from Sakamoto to
Sakamoto. Yeah, and how fun is this episode going to be? A lot of Sakamoto fans out there, I guess, in my opinion, you know, from the years that I've been doing this podcast and, you know, research video game music and listening to a lot of it, other than Koji Kondo and I guess I would say Uematsu, I can't think of another composer who has as wide of a reach of so many fans of video game music. So many people have such a powerful connection to Sakamoto's music from so many different series. So we're very excited to do this
episode. Well, as we mentioned, he's quite prolific. Today's episode, just by the nature of how much music this gentleman has composed, is going to be kind of a smorgasbord. It's a little smattering of all of his work. But for those of you who are diehard fans, you're definitely going to notice, like, how many amazing and incredible classic pieces of music we weren't able to include, just because really he has written so much.
Yeah, I mean, we're playing technically 21. I just couldn't make it to 20. 21 pieces of music today, and we had to cut so many great things. So we're well aware of that before you send the emails of, how could you not play this track? Honestly, there's just not enough room. So, okay, let's get into it, because we want to have time for everything. What you guys heard up top was from a very recent game called Dragon's Crown, which is not a game that I had really ever heard of before. I don't think it's that well known. It's a track called Town, so that's a town theme composed by Hitoshi Sakamoto. Let's move on. We're going to go chronologically now through his career. So let's go all the way back to, I think, the first game he ever worked on. He might have done some arrangement before this of other composers' work, but this is an original composition. This is a Game Boy game called Bubble Ghost. And so just as kind of your typical old school 8-bit game, but really interesting music here. Let's take a listen to the main theme from Bubble Ghost, composed by Hitoshi Sakamoto. Great way to start off this episode on the wonderful composer Hitoshi Sakamoto. You can even tell in this era that he has so much ambition, so much energy to try to make music that is so new and fresh and doesn't sound like what has come before him. This is not your typical Game Boy music. It's very melodic and rousing, but even though there are, I guess you would say, you know, drums and stuff here, it doesn't sound like it's like pop music. This feels like orchestral music that's condensed to like this kind of chip pop ensemble.
Yeah, it definitely stands out amongst other Game Boy tracks. Part of it, I like how layered the composition it is. Mm-hmm. It has all these different elements that kind of work together, and that it establishes some of those more tumultuous filigree type things that the melody soars on top of. Something I thought something I thought was kind of interesting, Carl, I don't know if you noticed this, that melody kind of reminded me of Back to the Future.
Will, I can't believe you brought that up. That's one thing we had to cut. He actually was the composer of Super Back to the Future Part 2.
Wait, really? Mm-hmm. That's so fantastic.
Remember his amazing rendition of the theme, but also really cool original music he did. I remember you brought in an original track from that game. So we had to cut that.
How did I forget that was Sakamoto?
Sakimoto, yeah.
You know, so, we talked about that on Underscore when we did the Back to the Future month where talked about that film. I remember sharing that with Marty because
Sakimoto, he is at his best when he is composing for the orchestra. He's just an amazing orchestral composer that there's no question that he was influenced by some of those orchestral
greats. It's awesome that as early as his work on the Game Boy, that was already evident.
So awesome. Okay, we're going to move on to... Now, for me personally, this is one of my favorite soundtracks from Sakimoto. We're only including one track because I tried to make this as fair and balanced as I could. For someone that's a really big Sakimoto fan, I didn't want them to get disappointed. So I didn't want to have too many tracks from this because I thought that might be a little skewed. So this is Devilish for the Genesis, which is, I believe, a pinball game. And he really outdid himself with the soundtrack. And listening to his music on the Genesis, it's so clear that this is a very special composer. He's not interested in just kind of following the textbook tropes of a lot of the other composers in this era. His music is so thoughtful and beautiful and surprising. There's always elements of it that you're not quite expecting. Let's take a listen to a very wonderful theme. This is the intro to Devilish for the Genesis. Let's take a listen. Amazing is that melody. It's so powerful. It starts out very simply in this kind of like electronic celeste style Genesis instrument with these weird atmospheric ambience there, and then just that low drone bass comes in. Very beautiful chords, beautiful melody. I don't know, if it was me, this would be a contender for a track of the week. I just happen to adore this melody.
Yeah, oh my god. As soon as this started, I used some curse words. Carl can attest to that, just because I don't know. It really is so classic, and it's the kind of thing that I never grew up with. Devilish. It's not a soundtrack I often listen to. In fact, this is a piece of music I've probably only heard a few times in my life.
We've played it before.
But it really sticks with you. I mean, right off the bat,
it's so
just
lyrical,
so evocative, and emotionally so sincere.
Another thing that's so unique about Sakimoto's Genesis music is, don't you think the implementation is so different here? In some ways, it doesn't even remind me of Genesis music. Mm-hmm. The way that he uses vibrato and delay is so unique. His instrument choices are just so creative and fresh.
He's really such a talent. Masterful. This is,
you know what?
One of the great video game themes, I think.
Will, do you want to just do track of the weeks as we go today and just kind of talk about which ones have blown us away? This is on the table, I think.
Absolutely.
Let's keep this on the table and then we'll discuss as we move on.
Yeah,
all right.
Should we do like an Excel spreadsheet on the go just
we
for
could.
You?
Do you want to do that?
I was joking, but I think it would make you happy, so let's do it.
All right, Will, so what would you rate? We don't need to do it for every track, but a track that really wows us, let's do that. So what
on
would you rate this track
of
1 to 10?
Track of the week, I'm gonna go 8.7.
I'm gonna go 8.9.
okay, well then I'll go 9.9. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, let me put this in. 8.7.
I'm not doing that to demean Devilish at all. I think Devilish is amazing. I'm just, this is the high regard that I hold Sakamoto's on.
Alrighty, let's move on. We're gonna move on to a game that was released for the Mega Drive. I say that because it was released only in Japan, so not in North America. This is called Veritex, and one thing that was very common for Sakimoto's career is most of the projects he worked on, I think I can say this, were collaborative projects with two to three other composers, very talented composers. But luckily, I think this is due to just the rabid fan base of Sakimoto. Almost every soundtrack that he has worked on, even these old retro runs, has really good crediting and breakdown of who composed what track. So this is a track that Sakimoto composed. This is Act One, The Void of Space, from Veritex. Let's take a listen.
Awesome.
That is so unique. Oh my gosh. Yeah, this is such a daring and bold piece of Mega Drive music. I can't think of another composer that is going as far as he does to try to make something so bold and unique. But it's not at the expense of like enjoyment musically. Like,
right.
We were grooving out to this. It's very groovy. The bass line is very funky. But the chord changes were so surprising. And in general, the compositional style is not... in my opinion, in the tradition of like pop or really even jazz, like he's using those jazzy chord changes, but doesn't this still feel orchestral in a way?
Yeah, it's interesting that sort of 80s pop chorus with all those slash chords. As much as that feels like pop music of the 80s, it also sounds like a lot of film music.
Yes.
And sorry to bring it back to the Future, but that's kind of Alan Silvestri's harmonic language a little bit, too. Like, when we discussed Back to the Future, we talked about how he integrated some of those Beatles-like chords into... Yeah. Film music. So I totally hear the film music influence. My favorite thing about this piece is actually that intro riff.
It's
that
really, really
cool delayed vibey thing. It just, oh man, it just like got right into my soul.
It's another reason why sometimes the Genesis can just be the best choice. Like, I wouldn't want to hear this with any other synth instrument, because the way that it's so sharp and also the hard panning.
Right.
That's
a really good point, Carl. I completely agree. This is it's a piece of music that is not ashamed to be in the Sega Genesis, which I think is really interesting because we talked about how it's so orchestral by the nature of its composition, but it really works well with the timbre of those synths. I want to put this on the spreadsheet. I would give this an 8.8.
I am going to give this... This was cool, but I wouldn't say this was as good as Devilish. I would say this is an 8.5 for me.
Okay, fine. You're convincing me. I'll go 8.2.
Ooh, that's quite a big dip, but all right, I approve of that. All right, so that is for Veritex.
Well, you reminded me of Devilish, and I'm like, yeah, Devilish is amazing.
All right, let's move on to one more, I guess, fairly obscure. So don't worry, you Sakimoto fans. We're going to get to some of his most beloved scores. We're going chronologically and skipping tons of games, by the way, so we're trying our best here. This is a game for the TurboGrafx-16. We're going to play the ending theme. I think this is really great. I really like this track. And again, he's using the TurboGrafx-16 in a way that I don't really hear other composers. I'm not hearing those sounds here. I'm just hearing just the expression of Sakimoto in this piece of music. This is Magical Chase Ending. Let's take a listen. You guys are listening to the ending from Magical Chase, which is fun. I wanted to include this because this is by far, out of anything today, the most video gamey sounding as far as retro, kind of that classic tradition. But it's so expressive. I don't think this is going to be on the docket for Track of the Week, but it's just a fun track. I did want to show this early side of Sakimoto because, I mean, he was very competitive. I mean, he could have composed, you know, fun video game music as well as anyone, but he just made a choice to kind of go off right. in some different directions. But here's a case where he's just kind of doing the classic VG thing.
Yeah, very bold harmonic moves. And
how about those during?
Yeah, beautiful. Very novel uses in terms of implementation of the hardware. I love the arpeggiator effect on the square pulse synths. Mm-hmm. And yeah, all the use of kind of portamento and the timbres he gets out of it. Yeah, it does not sound like your average right out of the box TurboGrafx track. It's something special. He really already on this one episode has showcased so much diversity
just
in terms
wait,
of
man.
The platforms he's written for, his right. different styles.
That's
I'm
another,
so excited to keep
that's
going.
A great thing is like every platform he writes for, I mean, I'm sure they're, especially because they're collaborative, there are other engineers working on it, but at the end of the day, like when you listen to a Sakimoto track, it always sounds good. I yeah. can't think of any one where it's like, ooh, this is like really, you know, Uncanny Valley, or like even his stuff for like the PS1, which typically sounds really cheesy. Like, yeah, it sounds sequenced, but it sounds nice and expressive. Let's move on. This is a game that I think kind of put him on the map. This is maybe the most serious and orchestral work he had done to this point. This is Ogre Battle, The March of the Black Queen, and it was the first game in a series that really became very beloved for Sakimoto fans. So we're going to play a couple tracks from this. What's interesting is a lot of the melodies that he composed for the series were reused in the various games. So we're going to try to play, you know, a decent amount from this series today. Let's start off with a very beautiful theme of his called Thunder, which is also known as Revolt later on in the series. Let's take a listen to this, composed by Sakimoto. You know, I'd love to sit down and talk with Sakimoto because we hear so much influence from Alan Silvestri in his
yeah.
music.
That's
I'm
so
sure
cool that he got
others.
To do Super Back to the Future, too.
Yeah, I'm sure there's many others that influenced him, but how wonderful is this? As far as the Super Nintendo goes for the early 90s, this is ridiculous. It's mm-hmm. so expressive and just legitimate orchestral music.
Right.
It's
I mean,
insane.
The use of the Lydian mode very prominently is something that we associate to film music. On mm-hmm. Underscore, we did a whole episode about Lydian because it's that much of a fixture in films. But it's not just about that. It's the nature of the theme itself, that it's sort of quasi-classical, but also there seems to be elements of the voicings of the harmony that do feel like they're from the pop or jazz world, which is
sure.
what American film music feels like to me.
I mean,
and Japanese film music as well.
As far as the history of video game music goes, this game came out originally in 1993 for the Super Nintendo. And mm-hmm. in 1993, what other like orchestral, like sequenced music was this legitimate? I mean, I guess you had things like maybe ActRaiser, Link to the Past, but Link to the Past has that very like iconic sound where it doesn't, it's just Zelda. It sounds so
right.
much like Koji Kondo. Like this sounds.
You can say the same about Final Fantasy, that
right.
they embrace a little bit more of eclecticism.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting about this game is also it's not just that it's orchestral. It's kind of this unrestrained orchestral. This in a track like this, it's very march heavy,
sure.
and classical with the you know, some of those lines feel a bit more performed. I guess they don't feel as digital or programmed
for
or anything.
Sure.
And it's something I was also just, it's a subtle thing, but the snare part, I think a lot of composers would do something like, but you notice all the kind of rolls,
it was very subtle.
Buzz rolls, and a very subtly, carefully composed and implemented snare part that really feels like it's being performed. Testament to his craft.
I mean, the level of taste that Sakimoto displays in his music is just staggering. I mean, so many great projects in this era, and we're going to get to at least a couple more where there are multiple composers, and this might be a good example. I think most of the music in March of the Black Queen was not by Sakimoto. It was by two composers, but the tracks Sakimoto that he did are so thoughtful, and you can tell he really spent a lot of time on every track he did.
He has a very signature harmonic voice. He loves to do this certain thing that I really like in a chord where it'll basically be a major chord, but it's a slash chord where in the bass you would have what would be the fourth scale degree of that chord. It's this very kind of dreamy, hazy chord sound. And I'm noticing it in most of the tracks we've played here today use that kind
of slash chord. Well, let's move on to one more track from March of the Black Queen. This is the finale. So really, it feels like Sakimoto was tasked with some of the most important themes of the game. He also did the overture, too. This is the finale from March of the Black Queen. Here we go. This is so great. I mean, especially in the context of Super Nintendo music, I really can't think of a game other than Ogre Battle that is this expressive and just on the nose for orchestral music. Like, you listen to this, you don't hear the crappy sample channels. You hear the beautiful melodies. You're just so distracted by the beauty of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, just so very filmic. Again, we have more Lydian mode. We have more wonderful slash chords and really tasteful orchestral symphonic orchestration. You know, those string eighth note staccato kind of chord textures are something that we hear all the time in films and in orchestral music in general. And it really sounds like an orchestra, not just in terms of the specific timbres of the samples that he's using, but how it was implemented and how the parts were composed. Like that timpani hit that happened about 15 seconds ago.
Sure.
That is the way that John Williams would use a timpani. Mm-hmm. In video games, when they use timpani, it's basically used as like a bass line where it's just constantly through the whole thing. In video games, they don't tend to use timpani as this subtle hit in a singular moment.
It should be mentioned that this is an authentic finale with all the tempo changes and how it's slowing down. That's not easy to do on the Super Nintendo. He's going all out. Sometimes, implementation-wise, this is really hard stuff to do, but it's a choice that it's like, I want it to be able to change tempo. I want it to seamlessly move between different ideas.
What I really respect about Sakimoto in this era is you can tell how much he's just craving to write for the orchestra.
Yeah.
And he is not letting the limitations of the hardware stand in his way.
Good point.
I so admire that because then on the other hand, you have, this is a cool thing about video games. You have someone like Koichi Sugiyama who is almost coming from the other perspective. He's so used to writing for the orchestra that it's this new challenge of writing for video games. He almost needs to simplify his ideas.
Right.
But what's interesting about looking at the two of them is you have someone who's more familiar with the orchestra, but ironically is writing music that, and I know they have those arrangements, but is actually a little bit less orchestral innately than Sakamoto's music.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on. We're going to move on to maybe, now it's either between this or one other as far as the most beloved.
So are we going to, that?
Let's rate that. Yeah. I'm going to give that.
I think the last two actually should be rated.
Let's just do Finale. I'm going to give Finale an 8.3. What are you going to give Finale?
I'm going to give it an 8.4. How do you like that, Carl?
I like it. Let's move on. Okay, so yeah, one of the most beloved soundtracks I think Sakamoto was ever a part of. Now, this is the same group of composers that worked on Ogre Battle here. So it's, I think, next in the series. It's called Tactics Ogre.
Right.
Let Us Cling Together. That's the name of this game. Now, this was released for multiple platforms, including the PS1 and others. Now, what I'm doing today, and I think a lot of fans would agree, I'm going to play the version that was re-released years later for the PSP. And the reason I'm doing that is because they had much better sequenced versions, arrangements of that original music. So it sounds much better, much closer to probably what Sakamoto envisions. So let's use those versions for Tactics Ogre today. We're going to play three pieces of music. Let's start off with a very beautiful one. This is called Reminiscence from Tactics Ogre, composed by Hitoshi Sakamoto. Here we go. You guys are listening to Reminiscence from Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together.
Man, that's good.
Now, this is from the PSP re-release. I think this is the best-sounding version, but originally released for the Super Nintendo in 95, also the Saturn, the PlayStation as well.
Man, I...
So
wow.
Good.
Beautiful.
This is a gorgeous melody.
I love that ostinato.
And then...
Right.
It's so evocative. It is reminiscent of a lot of Japanese game composers. Mm-hmm. But overall, Will was just blown away with, again, he's hearing so much Silvestri influence here.
Especially with these really kind of emotional, sweeping string sections. Mm-hmm. That really remind me of Castaway, score that Silvestri did. I almost could bet that if we were able to talk to Sakamoto and ask him who his favorite film composer is, I have a feeling it would be Alan Silvestri.
I think you might be
that. Gosh, this is gorgeous. And again, nice orchestration. I like the use of the flute and oboe as solo instruments in the beginning. Very unique, carefully constructed harmonic voice that he has. Yeah, this was an excellent piece. And I like, actually, that it's reminiscent. Funny mm-hmm. enough that it's called Reminiscence. But I like that it's reminiscent of other pieces of video game music, because it helps to situate it within that world.
Absolutely. Let's move on to another piece from Tactics Ogre. This is a little bit more climactic. This is called Catastrophe. And again, this is going to be from the PSP version. Let's take a listen. Here we go.
Thank you.
how wonderful is it to hear this? Will was saying, finally. Oh, man, just getting to hear the power of this orchestral ensemble here. This is Catastrophe from Tactics Ogre. This is a contender for sure. This is so awesome. I'm going to give this a 8.7. What do you give this, Will?
What was Devilish again?
You said that was an 8.7. I gave it an 8.9.
I should have given it an 8.8, but I'm going to give this an 8.6.
Sounds good. Yeah, this is so beautiful. It's interesting. I don't think they had the budget to do all of the tracks with kind of, you know, the same production quality. But at the end of the day, I think every single piece of music in the PSP version sounds so much better than at least like the PS1 and the Saturn version. They do have some of those little bit uncanny valley elements to them.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for this version, I probably would have just played the SNES version personally. Mm-hmm. Let me know, guys, you know, what your personal favorite version of this soundtrack is. But either way, what beautiful music here.
Yeah, I was at an 8.5 until that solo violin came Ooh. In. And then I'm like, okay, oh my God, that's gorgeous.
So beautiful.
Again, really specific and unique harmonic voice. I get a sense that harmony is very important to him, and finding a very precise kind of emotional language with his chord choices, I imagine, is something very important to him, because it's a standout element of every single one of the pieces that we've played so far today. We've noticed something notable or interesting about the harmony that doesn't just feel stock. It doesn't feel like, even though we're hearing some influence from film music, it doesn't feel like an impression of film music. It's really done with great love and care.
Gosh, it's wonderful. Let's move on to one last track from Tactics Ogre. I do want to mention that even though we got the better sounds of the orchestra, we are going to have to go backwards a little bit, because we're going back after this to a Super Famicom game and then the 64.
Hey,
and
man,
stuff.
That's
so
totally
that's okay.
Fine.
We'll get back to better sounds. Okay, let's play one more track. This is called Theme of Black Knight. Let's take a listen. Beautiful. You guys are listening to Theme of Black Knight from Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together, composed by Hitoshi Sakimoto. He has such a command of the orchestra. It is so fun hearing his early video game music. I totally agree with you, Will. It seemed like he was yearning to be able to write for the orchestra, so I'm sure he was really pleased to hear this, you know, this re-release here, that the music sounds so much better. I'm not sure if he was involved in resequencing this stuff. But yeah, it's just, you know, going back to the way that the original Tactics Ogre sounded. I mean, the melodies were all there, you know, and that was clear. Because even a lot of the melodies that he wrote for the original Ogre Battle, like, for example, that Thunder piece of music, that was reused in this game. And so you can hear, like, a better version of that. But the music was all there.
He loves these pretty emotional B sections.
Yes, he does.
I
sometimes I very just, dark and that. Tragic. That, mm-hmm. Yeah, his music can be very intense to listen to.
Well, right. I mean, this A section is filled with all this tumult, and it's really aggressive. But then, again, we have this beautiful solo violin mm-hmm. that is almost like a respite from all of the energy.
Absolutely. Okay, so I'm excited to move on to this game. Now, it's possible that I might not just be aware, but I thought this was an amazing soundtrack that was maybe a little bit underrated. This is Treasure Hunter G, Have you heard of this, Will?
I've not, no.
So this is an amazing soundtrack that was composed by a lot of the same people. I think at some point Sakimoto left the company he was working for and informed his own company that had a lot of the same people on his team that he worked with over and over again. I don't know if he did that at this point. I think it might have still been working for, was it Square maybe at this time? But anyway, in any event, Treasure Hunter G is just a dense, amazing soundtrack. And Sakimoto did a very small number of tracks, but everything he did was just amazing. We're only going to play one today. This is Demi Human Battle. You guys are in for a treat. This is from Treasure Hunter G. Here we go. I'm really excited to be able to showcase some more of this music in the future. There was one track that was very beautiful and had a lot of harp in it. Reminded me of Chrono Trigger, so I'm excited to maybe unveil that in the future. But this is Demi Human Battle from Treasure Hunter G, one of the pieces that was composed by Sakimoto. And once again, I'm so grateful that we have such good crediting, because at first I was ready to not be able to include some of these games because, oh, there's all these composers. How am I going to know which track is Sakimoto? But on the SPC sound files, every single track individually credits it. So I'm really grateful for that.
What a neat thing. This is... Again, we've been saying this a lot, but just so novel, so distinct a voice amongst other game composers. It's all very high energy. It works really well for the medium. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like he's doing something very atmospheric and ambient. Sure. No, it's very high energy. It's very in your face. It often is very melodic and tuneful. But I think it would be hard for someone to describe it as kind of polychromatic, plucky, fun, light music. Mm-hmm. It all has this intensity to it and this kind of harmonic haze, this complexity with
yes.
both how he voices and implements everything, but the chords he's evoking and sometimes the modes and everything. It's really hitting this neat balance, I think.
One thing that's so interesting about hearing his work on Treasure Hunter G, maybe it's because he only did like, it's something like 5 or 6 tracks, and there's like hundreds and hundreds of tracks. But whenever you get to another Sakimoto track, it's almost like you're listening to this master. He's moved past the Super Nintendo. He is so much more past writing for the system. So he's like, all right, well, this is what I'm writing. And whoever implemented this did a bang-up job of trying to get this to come alive on the Super Nintendo. It's so special to hear this. Such harmonic complexity in Sakimoto's music.
The other
music.
Thing I noticed, very detailed articulation for the instruments.
Sure.
Yana, yana, yana.
That's an important part.
You know, when it's staccato, when it's short, when it's long.
Good call.
Very precise articulation.
All right, we're going to hear some more harmonic complexity. We're going to move on to another very beloved title. It's either going to be Tactics Ogre or this, that maybe are the most beloved things that Sakimoto's done so far. This is Final Fantasy Tactics. He got to compose this. He was the lead composer on this game. We're going to play 3 pieces of music from this. Now, we've played some music from this before. Wonderful. I think this blows out Final Fantasy VII so far out of the water, it's not even funny. And I think it's a little bit sad that the release of that made such a big splash, and the soundtrack of that was, I would say, overhyped, overrated, that this feels like it's underrated, and it's so amazing. Let's take a listen to Hero's Theme from Final Fantasy Tactics, which was originally released, I believe, on the PS1. Let's take a listen. Thank you. You guys are listening to Hero's Theme from Final Fantasy Tactics. Compare this to the music of Final Fantasy VII. I mean, I don't want to harp on this too much, but it's night and day. This is serious, beautiful music. So much of the music here in Final Fantasy VII, there's like this goofy quality to it, even when it comes to the implementation. Like, I just think that he was taking this so much more seriously. For whatever reason, this came out the same year for the PS1. And when you compare the two and go back and forth, it's a night and day difference. I'm not sure if that's maybe just my opinion, but what are your thoughts maybe on that?
Yeah, I think I'm also more prone to celebrate this score than Final Fantasy VII. I think it's hard to say, you know, who put in more effort because, mm-hmm. you know, the music that you get as a result, it's not always the product of who tried harder. And I know that Uematsu is a great composer who's also prolific, but I see him as someone who has hits and misses. You know, when he's on, it's some of the greatest music.
Well, yeah, I mean,
there are moments, there's a disconnect. I think,
you know, you have like the One Winged Angel, a moment of like epicness and stuff. But I mean, you just have things that just are a swing and a miss, in my opinion, in Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I do think that they're different and they don't need to be competing. Even if mm-hmm. you're a fan of Final Fantasy VII, I think you would still very much enjoy a piece of music like this. What I was just so in awe of and really marveling at when listening to this is just taking a step back and realizing how versatile this composer is.
It's crazy.
Really, we've heard so much similarity with some of the music that we've played and trying to identify what really makes up Sakamoto's style. But mm-hmm. in a piece like this, I almost have to throw that away because none of those elements exist in a track like this, yet it is staggeringly beautiful. Mm-hmm. It has a great melody, and harmony does play a big role, but it's a different kind of chord progression. It's a different type of harmony than we've heard before.
Well, you bring up a great point. I mean, harmonics and his use of harmony, that's such an essential part to Sakimoto's sound, is the mm-hmm. way that he uses harmony. If I actually had to condense it to one thing, that would be what separates him as a composer. Now, this was also
overindulgent. I feel mm-hmm. like there's a tipping point with harmony where you can kind of go off the edge into crazy town.
Now, this game was also worked on by Masaharu Iwata, who's a composer that worked a lot with Sakimoto, and eventually they went on to form their own company. I believe Sakimoto was the main founder, but he hired all these people called Basescape, and so that's the company that basically was hired for some of these later games by you know, similar companies that he worked for before. So it's really great that, you know, these really strong partners were able to keep composing together. All right, let's move on to a very rousing piece of music. This is Trisection from Final Fantasy Tactics. Once again, Sakimoto is able to elevate. He's able to go above these harsh limitations because the PS1 just doesn't sound very good. I think a lot of people might agree with that. But when you listen to a piece of music like this, the composition is so wonderful and the harmony is so complex, so much expression here that you're distracted by that and you're able to really enjoy this and be moved by this piece of music. It just feels like I'm listening to a film score here. It's so incredible. And he's able to get that on the PS1. This is a system that a lot of times I cringe at the sound of. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of other composers that worked on the PS1 that were able to get this sound.
Yeah, this music really is transcendent.
And I guess I'm talking about sequenced PS1 music here.
No, I know exactly what you mean. But I do think a truly great composition will always shine through and always transcend whatever presentation it's given. I mean, I think it takes something really special to do that. But the thing that I really admire about Sakamoto is he's almost stubborn in a way. It doesn't matter what platform he's working on. That doesn't really seem to affect the nature of the music he's writing. I mean, on the Game Boy, that music could have been for an orchestra, and on the right. Genesis and on the Super Nintendo and on the TurboGrafx, it's like his voice shines through and he's versatile as a composer, but I feel like that versatility comes from an awareness of the project in what mm-hmm. emotional tone it needs and not the limitations of the hardware. But that's an amazing thing, because it's not like you can just imagine those limitations weren't there, because sure. they are very pressing, and the composer needs to be cognizant of those challenges in order to overcome them. But Sakamoto is able to just, like, I don't know, tap dance through all that stuff that you don't even realize it. I mean, I think a lot of people would just hear music. They're not hearing Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, PlayStation. You know, they're just hearing music and yeah, this singular compositional voice.
Such a good point. I'm excited to move on to one last track of Final Fantasy Tactics. This is my actual personal favorite track. I'm a really big fan of this. This is called Battle on the Bridge. And what's really cool about this one is he actually uses the Heroes theme mm-hmm. that we heard on the solo harp. He uses that here. Very effective. Let's take a listen to Battle on the Bridge. Guys listening to Battle on the Bridge from Final Fantasy Tactics. Now this is what battle music needs to be. Right. This is so awesome. It's not sacrificing any like musicality just to try to make something confrontational. It's just every bit as engaging as the tracks we heard before, but it's definitely it's so much more energetic and, mm-hmm. and climactic, which is yeah. fitting a battle.
And I love that it's calling back to a mm-hmm. pre-existing motive.
Yeah,
it's a really effective technique, and it's kind of an age-old device for musical storytelling, but it works really well here. I have to say, I think this track does warrant a spot on our spreadsheet.
Let's
I think I'm
going to
go 8.1 for this.
8.1. I'm going to go ahead and do 8.2. I really enjoy this. I think this is a really great track. Okay, let's move on. I'm excited to move on. Okay, now we're going to move on to a space shooter that was released for the Saturn. This is Radiant Silver Gun. And that one thing that I was so blown away with, we have featured music from this game before, but I see that it's composed by Sakamoto. I'm like, oh, a space shooter for the Saturn. I have an idea of what I think it will sound like. I'm sure you do as well, Will. Maybe kind of electronic-y, something more groovy, right? Something maybe a little bit more old school arcade.
Nope, how did you know?
Not at all. Sakamoto, in this time, he's like, that's not the music I want to do for this game. I want to add more legitimacy to this game, and I'm so glad he did. This is just as beautiful, just as orchestral as what we just heard in Final Fantasy Tactics. In some ways, it feels like it could fit into Final Fantasy Tactics. Let's take a listen to Debris from Radiant Silver Gun. Yet another example of Sakimoto beating to his own drummer here. He's not making typical Saturn music. I mean, once again, he doesn't have the budget for a full orchestra, which is unfortunate, but that's not stopping him either. I mean, he's making sequenced music for the Saturn in a way that most other composers were not interested in doing. And because of that, it holds up way more than a lot of Saturn music. It's very emotional, very expressive. It's just a direct line into your human emotions. This is incredible. This is debris from Radiant Silver Gun.
I notice he uses a lot of these unison arpeggiated lines in moments of battle music.
Some of that reminds me of John Williams' work a little bit.
Sure. I mean, very film music-y in general, sometimes evoking what almost sounds like chordal harmony or just very extended chords, sometimes even maybe the octatonic scale.
How funny is it that he's incorporating the orchestra hit, like synth sound, into an orchestral sequence piece? I think that's really cute. That's probably not something that he would have done if he would have had maybe more advanced virtual instruments, but this is the 90s here, so we have to keep that in mind. Okay, so let's move on. We're going to move on to, I think, the last entry in this. I don't know if I'm going to call this like the Tactics series or the Ogre series. This is Ogre Battle 64, Person of Lordly Caliber. Now, a lot of music in this soundtrack was reused from the previous entries, but there was some new music as well. Let's take a listen to a very beautiful piece of music that I would love to rate on our spreadsheet. This is Fortune Teller from Ogre Battle 64, composed by Sakimoto. Is so gorgeous. That might be the most beautiful track of the day. Oh my goodness, you guys are listening to Fortune Teller from Ogre Battle 64, elevating the N64. The N64 was never used this way in any other game. I don't care what you're talking about. This sounds really good,
Carl,
really expressive.
I think I'm going to blow your mind.
Really beautiful.
9.
You're going to give this a 9? I'm giving this an 8.8. So far, this is the highest rated track of the day. This is Fortune Teller.
Oh, it's so beautiful. I'm at a loss for words. I mean, we could dissect it. I would talk about some of the Lydian features, that beautiful sequency B section, the use of delay with the production.
Right.
The timbre of that oboe sample is just fantastic.
I want to interview this team.
And
again, I think a lot of the same people that worked on the original Ogre Battle did this. And I would want to interview them to ask, how did they get the 64 to sound this good?
Yeah. I mean, implementation aside, musically, this is maybe my favorite melody that we've heard so far today.
So soaring. Feels like I'm floating on a cloud.
Oh my God. It's a textbook perfect melody. Just that phrase, I'm saying, because I love, you know, the way it builds momentum. You start with a note, da, 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 da.
Sure.
The natural next impulse is to go, da, da, da. You know, that's what we're all expecting. But he goes, da, 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 and uses that faster rhythm almost as a springboard for this beautiful interval leap and then coming back down. It's so natural and effortless. It has a very distinctive character. And I also love every time we return to it in the loop, it's a bit of an unprepared, I don't want to say modulation, but returning to that chord is unexpected.
In a good
Yet,
way, though.
The way that he has orchestrated and set up that moment, it's actually my favorite part of the piece, is returning to the leap.
And that's one thing that I'm so happy about video game music as a tradition. That was something that he had to do because you had to have loops in this game. He wouldn't have necessarily done that if he was working for a film. So just those really creative moments of like, how do you get back to that original idea? How do you modulate back? Really creative stuff. Let's move on to one last track from Ogre Battle 64. And again, it was hard to pick which tracks to play. Some of these great melodies we already heard in Tactics Ogre, for example. There's so many more great ones we could play. So, you know, we tried to do our best here. Let's move on to Notice of Death. Let's take a listen. This is a very nice change of pace on this playlist. This is much more background-oriented music. It's music that fits really well in the background while story elements are happening. It's definitely more background than, for example, like that fortune teller track or that debris track. It's not as much in your face, and I think Sakimoto is equally as gifted as making this kind of music. And for every score that we featured today, there's plenty of these types of examples on there that we didn't, you know, have as much time to play. I think we focused, maybe rightly so, on the more melodic stuff, the stuff that really stands out. But yeah, this is another side of Sakimoto. Will, what are your thoughts on this piece? Like, to me, I hear just a lot more subtlety and not as overt a melody here.
There's a subdued militarism to it.
Yes.
You know, like a lot of his music that we've played so far today is action music. It uses snare drum. It feels militaristic, warlike. And a piece like this, even though it doesn't necessarily have those elements, and it's a little bit more subdued in its nature, it does feel harmonically like there's an echo of some of that. And I think that's really cool and a very profound musical impact, I think.
Yeah.
When even in the moments of quiet, you're still being reminded of that sort of brutality.
Okay, I just have been yearning this whole playlist to finally get to this. We are now moving on to Final Fantasy XII. It's so wonderful that him and his team, again, a lot of these same people that he had been working with for years, got to score this soundtrack in the mainline Final Fantasy series. Finally, it's about time. And they outdid themselves. This is an amazing soundtrack. One of the best in the whole series, I would say. You know, after the classics, you know, on the NES and the Super NES, I think this might be the next best one. I think it blows 7 so far out of the water, it's not even funny. What we're going to do is we're going to play one track from the original release, and then we're going to play two tracks from a re-release version called Final Fantasy XII, The Zodiac Age. It was released years later. It's the same game, but they re-orchestrated it with a real orchestra. So with the original game, I think there was only a couple pieces that had a real orchestra, and a lot of it is sequenced. This first one, I believe, is one of the ones that is real, if I'm not mistaken. So let's take a listen to this. This is the theme of Final Fantasy XII, composed by Hitoshi Sakimoto. How amazing is this? Oh my goodness, I can't believe we're listening to Final Fantasy music here. This is the theme of Final Fantasy XII, composed by Hitoshi Sakimoto. And I don't mean that as a disparaging remark. It doesn't necessarily remind me of other Final Fantasy themes. It's just, it's so beautiful. It reminds me a lot more of John Williams, really. I'm getting like Jurassic Park vibes here, really, more than Final Fantasy. But what a treat that they were able to orchestrate at least some of the music in the original release, and that they got a composer like Sakimoto to compose this. There's so much, you know, it's similar to what we've been talking about today. So much heart and energy and ambition in this piece of music that, in my opinion, was maybe absent for a few years from the series.
Well, and it was really there all along in Sakimoto's music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, now we're hearing it with an orchestra, so it's in a more comfortable suit of clothes that we're familiar with.
I mean, I really do like Final Fantasy XI, and some of the Naoshi Mizuta tracks in XI I think are really good. But overall, I mean, and I might be in the minority here, but, you know, 10 and 11, I don't know. There were good tracks, but overall, I just didn't get like the depth of emotion that I got in like 4, 5, and 6.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a soundtrack where I feel like you're returning to that depth of emotion.
Completely.
Beautiful stuff.
Oh boy, that choir and the flutes, and I mean, I can't say enough about this. This piece goes to 8.8.
8.8 for Will Boy on. This is the main theme of Final Fantasy XII. I'm going to do 8.7 on this guy. Okay, let's move on to... We're going to play two more tracks from Final Fantasy XII, but these two, we're going to move on to the version of Final Fantasy XII, The Zodiac Age, which was a re-release. I think this was re-released for PS4, if I'm not mistaken, so it was fairly recent. And like I said, this is a real orchestra here. This is beautiful. Let's take a listen to a track called... The Dalmasca Easter Sand. Here we go. Guys, I really recommend that you go and you A-B the original versions from 12 with these Zodiac Age versions, because the original versions are pretty nice. You know, it's good sequencing. It sounds really good. But hearing this this re-release version with the real orchestra, oh my gosh, it really elevates it. I mean, I imagine Sakimoto was so pleased when he heard that they were going to re-release this.
Yeah, I love the kind of light comic music sound at the beginning of this track.
And sure.
I mean, I keep saying it, but a wonderful use of the Lydian mode.
Right.
It's kind of becoming one of Sakimoto's staples, but beautiful orchestration.
It is kind of an easy way to evoke a little bit more legitimacy and kind of modern or film music flair.
Sure.
And that's something that's definitely going to be wanted.
Well, I guess not necessarily modern, but definitely film music.
Well, film music is kind of a modern orchestral
tradition.
Sure,
modern in the grand scheme of
music history. In the grand
scheme of it.
Okay, guys, let's move on to the last track of the day other than the playout. This is The Sky City of Bujerba from Final Fantasy XII, Zodiac Age.
Thank you.
That was so delightful. Thanks so much for everyone joining us today on the spotlight on the wonderful composer Hitoshi Sakimoto. A long overdue episode, this guy is just one of the greats. Like I said, you know, on the top of the episode, other than maybe Koji Kondo and Uematsu, he seems to, from what I've been seeing all over the internet and talking with different people, his music seems to reach people in this deep way that I can't say other video game composers do. So really great we get to focus on this. Let's tally up the scores here. I think we're probably going to have, let's do three track of the weeks. Let's do the Fortune Teller theme from 64. Let's do the Devilish intro, and let's do the Final Fantasy XII theme.
Sounds great.
I think those would be the tracks of the week this week.
Who's the winner in terms of numbers?
The numbers, it's actually Fortune Teller's number one.
That's what I thought.
Number two is Devilish, and number three is the Final Fantasy theme.
I agree that those would be the orders I'd put it.
So, so good. Okay, guys, so what we're going to do is we're going to play you out with a really cool theme from Valkyria Chronicles. This is Desperate Fight, again by Sakimoto. A great way to play out the episode. Thanks so much for joining us. Next week, we have an episode that's kind of oddly related to this. Maybe we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
That should be another good time. And then after that, so we actually move things around. After next week's episode, we will have a Mercado Radio as well, kind of transition. So he's going to be up here one more week, so we'll have one more time to record in person, and then have that transition week, and then we'll be going back to the episodes via Skype, which will, you know, obviously take a little bit of transition as well. So, but you know, we're used to it at this point. We've been doing that. Would you say maybe the majority of our episodes have, in the course of our podcast, have probably been via Skype?
God, I hope that's not the case.
It might be,
it
though.
It might be.
It's definitely about half, at least, you know.
At this point. It really has been quite
used to that process. So thanks so much, everyone. We want to thank all our lovely patrons for your support on Patreon. If anyone isn't aware, that's a great way that you can support us to, you know, offset the costs and the time that it takes to do this show. We had last week was a Patreon episode, and we have more coming very soon this season.
I want to mention last weekend at the time of recording, we played, the Super Mercado Brothers band played at 2DCon.
Yes.
Which was such a fun event. We had a great time playing
good
that
turnout.
Show. And yeah, for any of you who attended and were at the show, thank you so much for coming. And
yeah, we made some new
friends.
Hope
you liked it. Yeah, it was
we posted
really fun.
We posted a snippet video, just kind of like some highlights videos to our YouTube channel. So you can check it out and see, you know, little clips of, I think, three tracks that we performed live. So it was a lot of fun. We played those songs so fast. I was listening back to it and I was like, what were we on? Were we on
speed?
I remember
how we were talking about, oh, Ripple Field was so slow, and then you go back and listen to it and it's like, no,
everything.
It isn't.
Like Airman is doing, 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 doing. It was just like, we were excited to play that music.
Yeah. It was a blast.
Yeah.
We always love any opportunity to play video game music. Last thing I want to mention, other shows on the Mercado Brothers Network. Last week, Carl was actually a guest on an episode of Heroes 3. They talked about the movie Wheels on Meals,
that was,
which is
so
an absolute
fun.
Classic.
Oh, that was such a blast. I had a great time being on that. That was just, I went over to Marty's place and we watched the movie just before recording the podcast, and just getting to talk with those guys about it. It's one of my favorites. So if anyone is a fan of Kung Fu movies and you haven't seen Wheels on Meals, or you haven't listened to that podcast, do both of those things.
Yeah, check out Heroes 3, and we have links to it on our Twitter page. And also Underscore, the sort of sibling podcast to this that I co-host with Marty about film music. This month, it's
crazy
all
month.
E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Oh so my goodness.
We're really excited about
one,
that.
One, if you're studying the orchestra, if you're studying film music, it's one of those scores that needs to be studied. You know,
right.
It's like the Great Gatsby,
yeah.
Of, you know, film
right.
Scores. All right, guys, we're going to leave you with Desperate Fight from Valkyria Chronicles. Thank you so much. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
I'm Will Brueggemann. Have a great week, everyone.
Peace out.